From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Ramon.
Larkspur in Marin County.
Simpson Beach.
I live in Noe Valley in Novato.
I live in San Anselmo right next to Fairfax.
Coming up, California voters decide if public schools should teach classes in languages other than English.
The research shows that students who choose to participate in multilingual programs attain high levels of academic achievement.
Then a composer breaks down unexamined bias in Western music theory.
So these are not microtones, these are not three-quarter tones, in the same way that you and I cannot call ourselves three-quarters human because we're not all so-called white.
And we'll learn the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound. We're all ears today on Cross Currents. We're going to start today's show with the latest story in our ongoing election coverage to help you get ready for the big day. It is, after all, less than a week away. Back in 1998, voters passed a state proposition that critics say has slowed the growth of bilingual education in California. Right now, most public school classes like science and math are required by law to be taught in English only. But this year, a new ballot measure asks voters to change that. Proposition 58 would allow schools to teach classes in multiple languages rather than just in English. Here's reporter Sarah Tan with more.
In a fourth grade class at Buena Vista Horace Mann in the Mission District, the school's 10-year-olds are learning Common Core math. They're practicing multiplying double-digit numbers, but it's not in the way you'd think, because they're learning it entirely in Spanish. And California voters will soon be able to decide if programs like this can be started elsewhere.
Eduardo, para resolver el problema yo.
That's math teacher Frank Lara calling on a fourth grader to answer a problem. Founded nearly 20 years ago, Buena Vista is one of San Francisco's first and longest-running Spanish immersion programs. Half of the students speak English and half speak Spanish at home.
The model starts with 90% Spanish in the lower grades, kindergarten, and then starts moving into 50% English and Spanish as they move on fifth, sixth, and middle school.
By the time they graduate, students should be fully fluent in both languages. But right now, schools like Buena Vista that teach core subjects bilingually aren't allowed in most cities, mostly due to Proposition 227. That was a California ballot measure that restricts bilingual programs in public schools unless parents sign a waiver every year, like they do at Buena Vista. Here's Christina Wong, special assistant to the superintendent in San Francisco Unified.
And it made it really difficult for a lot of districts to be able to start up new language programs.
So, as a result, less than 5% of California's public schools offer multilingual programs, even though one in four of these students is an English language learner.
I think essentially what Prop 58 does, though, it really brings back the value of bilingualism, where I think Prop 227 really said bilingualism was not important.
Ron Unz was the co-author of Prop 227 back in 1998. He explained why he wrote the proposition in archival footage from the Associated Press.
Teaching children English is the way for them to learn English. Teaching children in a Spanish-only environment, Spanish when they go to school, is not the way to teach them English. I think Latino population in California will advance academically tremendously because of the passage of this initiative.
But that's not what educators today are saying. The ballot measure has racked up over $4 million in support from teachers' unions across the state. And advocates like Ryan Smith, director of EdTrust West, say English language learners desperately need a change.
English learners can be doing better in the state.
He says out of the state's 1.4 million English language learners in California, less than 15% are proficient in English or math.
If we go at the current rate, all California English learners won't meet college-ready standards in my lifetime or any of our lifetimes. And that's a cause for concern. This should really be a call to action to support the future of California.
And he also says, for English-speaking families, there's a renewed interest in bilingual language programs.
Number one, the research shows that students who choose to participate in multilingual programs attain high levels of academic achievement. We also see a recent UCLA study that found that two-thirds of all employers prefer to hire a bilingual employee over a monolingual employee, which shows that this isn't just a moral imperative issue for the state, it's also an economic imperative.
But critics, like the state Republican and Libertarian parties, say learning English is a key part of assimilation. Starchild is the outreach director for the California Libertarian Party. He says libertarians worry not prioritizing English could reinforce racial segregation.
I think it really does tend to end up segregating people. I think students will be better integrated and better accepted by the rest of society. You know, you won't have, over there in some special program where it's easy to otherize them.
Other critics think that bilingual education will make it harder to standardize tests. But for teachers like Buena Vista's Frank Lara, allowing bilingual education is also about welcoming students of different backgrounds. Learning multiplication is hard enough, and it can be harder if you can't talk to the teacher.
It's a sense of empowerment to express themselves and be validated as people and their culture that their thinking counts.
In one of the nation's most diverse states, voters will soon decide if California schools should embrace being bilingual or keep things the way they are. For Cross Currents, I'm Sarah Tan.
There's lots more election coverage over at our website, including two-minute briefs on all of the statewide propositions. Head to kalw.org to find out more. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The work of San Jose saxophonist and composer Hafiz Modirzadeh is equal parts head and heart. He loves to delve into the theory of music as well as the mind-transcending direct experience of making it. His work encompasses jazz, new music, Persian classical, and more. He also co-directs the Jazz and World Music Program at San Francisco State. Modirzadeh spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about working on a musical philosophy to match his view of the world, where there's no hierarchy of cultures or traditions.
Did you grow up playing music?
No, not playing music. Although my father, from Iran, he could sing in the tradition, and he played the tombak, which is the Persian drum. I started the saxophone at 12 years old. I was in seventh grade.
And did you choose a sax on purpose, or was it like, I was sitting how about this one?
Yeah, that's an interesting moment, because I was sitting in Mr. Dunton's class, band, and there was a semicircle, and kind of the girls were on one side, then over here, and then there was Charlie and myself. And
Charlie was your buddy.
Charlie was someone. Well, he just happened to be there. Down in the South Bay, that high school, there were fewer African American kids than Mexican, and at that time there were really no Persians. So I think I was falling in with a lot of the Mexican kids, and then
just
the other kids too.
Kind of the other brown kids.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But there was Charlie sitting next to me, and this has significance for me, because Mr. Dunton went down the line, and he started on the girl's side, asking, "What do you want to play?" And I'm thinking, I happen to be last in the semicircle, and I'm thinking, "I like flute. I like to play flute." And he went along, and all the girls were saying flute and clarinet, flute and clarinet, flute and clarinet. When he got to Charlie, in this very lyrical way, Charlie said, "Well, I like to play the alto saxophone." And then he went to me and said, "What would you like to play?" I said, "I'd like to play the alto saxophone." It sounded so nice. It just rolled off the tongue, you know, and then that was it.
So your musical output encompasses a lot of different styles now. So jazz, new music, Persian classical, what you call cross-cultural chromodal discourse. What do you call your music when someone asks you, say, at a party? What do you play?
That's such a good question. These days, there's a lot of genre labels being thrown around and attached together. And it's a funny thing, because it gets to be like race or anything else, ethnicity, religion, parties, badges you wear on your lapel, what genre, what label, you know. And it would be really contrived for me to say, well, I play chromodal music, and then, okay, well, what's that? And then blah, 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 blah. But when you really get down to it, it's better just to say Djen music, Kafez's music, what is your music? And then when you get to know the person, you get to know, you can hear. You can hear all of their influences and everything.
Mm. It's a good answer, but not an answer.
Well, I think when you mentioned chromodal, well, yeah, that's probably the closest, because that's a term that I came up with. It turns out that's a term that other people had come up with before me and since. It's just a term.
So can you explain that for people who aren't musicians?
Yeah, sure.
And
it's very easy. And it's not even all about music. Chro signifies for me the range or spectrum of something. And a mode is really a phenomenon of behavior or a mannerism or something that works in a certain way. It really, in musical terms, it had to do with reconciling what I was learning in Persian music from my teacher at the time in the early 80s, Mahmoud Zofanun, Persian violinist, who helped to impart the intonation, the temperament of Persian music for me to my saxophone.
When you say temperament, what does that mean musically?
Temperament has to do with tuning in music, you know, how
so
music
like
is tuned.
The classic Western scale.
Yeah, that's Western, that's a tuning. But then there are others in the world, from Indonesia and China, everywhere.
Right.
You
microtones.
Know. They call them, well, in the West, in Western terms, we have to call them microtones.
Because they fit in between the right. Traditional Western notes.
Right. And also that suggests that these are quarter tones, or we quantify these non-Western, again, the concept of West and the rest. It's a danger in that because we have what we call half steps or semitones in Western music, and then we're going to call these other things microtones or something smaller quantitatively. But in reality, everything is whole. In other words, I always say that the thinking that produced this Western temperament and calling these tones semi and half also led to calling peoples of the world semi-human. You know, half human, and quantifying human beings in order to justify, you know, the colonial or the capitalism of the time, you know, whatever,
right.
the commodification of humans. So the same thing with tones, and we still kind of live out the vestiges of this in our thinking. So these are not microtones. These are not quarter tones. These are not three quarter tones. Not as in the same way that you and I cannot call ourselves three quarters human because we're not all so-called white. You know, it doesn't make any. The adultus doesn't make any sense. We are tall, to some seemingly tall or short or wide or narrow, whole human beings, and so our tones resonate whole. So musically, so chromodality is the idea that all of this can coexist together.
It seems to me from the outside that part of your work that you're putting out there is these ideas. It's not just the music, the sound of the music, but it's the ideas behind them. Mm-hmm. And as I hear you talk, there's definitely a deeper philosophy beyond just music about what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So do you ever think about your work as activist music? I know when using that term, a lot of people think of political songs or folk music that goes along with the protest, but it seems to me that you're really trying to do something in the world your music.
I hope that it activates people. Anything out there that can continue that dialogue, it has to raise the consciousness. And the raising of the consciousness is like heat. You know, there has to be a friction. And back to that conflict, you know? There has to be a friction. So you rub two sticks together, it creates a heat, and heat rises from that, from those ashes and that fire. And that's the consciousness that has to be raised from what we call art. But art really is, isn't that an old English verb for being? Thou art?
That's
isn't
right.
that it? So an artist is someone who's working on how to be. Just how to be. That's the only ism I subscribe to.
That That was musician Hafiz Mudirzadeh talking with KLW's Jen Chien. He'll be accompanying poet Nathaniel Mackey at a house concert in Berkeley this coming Monday. More information at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound. Isn't that cool? Think you know what it is and where we recorded it? I'll let KALW's Nina Gensler Dubs tell you all about it. At first glance, the structure right in front of the Civic Center BART station looks like the skeleton of an unbuilt house. But in this case, looks are not only deceiving, they actually don't really matter. It's what this sounds like that's important.
Most of the time in life, we go through life just hearing what we see.
That's Deshaun Stallsworth. He works for Pit Stop, a San Francisco Department of Public Works program that maintains public facilities, things like toilets, sinks, and used needle receptacles. Today, though, he's here to tell me about what I'm hearing. It's called TikTok Walk, and to use it, you start with these big wooden pendulums.
The idea of the TikTok is to move the arms forward. And as you move the arms forward, there's balls up top, and they make clicking sounds.
I follow behind Deshaun through a series of arches, pushing those pendulum arms and watching them swing. It feels a little bit like I'm Alice in Wonderland, shrunk down to wander through the guts of a clock.
This is the idea of hearing sounds that you normally wouldn't pay attention to by concentrating on one clicking rhythmic sound. They constantly just go click, click, clock, click, click, clock. And as you walk through, some people have experienced a meditative feeling. Click, click, clock.
TikTok Walk is just one of the exhibits that make up Sound Commons, a collaboration between the Exploratorium and the city. The idea is to make UN Plaza more fun, interactive, and safe.
Everybody wants to feel comfortable. Everybody wants to feel connected, which is my belief. They feel as one, and I believe that this environment creates that type of atmosphere.
Sometimes that might mean being a support for people who spend a lot of time here. UN Plaza is a gathering place for a lot of San Francisco's homeless population. Deshaun is here to try and direct people towards helpful resources, but also to listen.
They may need somebody to be here to listen to, just to hear them say talk, to bring them maybe a little bit of peace and understand what they may go through in everyday life. So our job kind of takes a variety of different things in every day. You can look at the chimes as a religious call. It's also a good place for people to come together and create noises as one.
The chime line is a forest of 62 tall metal pipes, taller than most of the people who walk through them on a wooden platform. They stick up from the ground in spiky rows, and there are big mallets you can use to hit them.
Here we're using the sounds as different ways to experience vibrations. By hitting the poles, you'll feel different vibrations bounce off the tubes.
There are actually two lines of chimes on either side of UM Plaza. And at the end of one of those lines are a quartet of xylophones.
There's four different installations. Two wooden, two metal. Each one produces a different tone, a different sound, a different harmonic musical noise. It's like playing what your heart desires and feeling free to do so.
The one that attracts the most attention is also the hardest one to describe, and I happen to be very bad at it.
What happens if I whisper? I'm walking across the stones. Right now, my score keeps rising.
Up too loud, try again.
The thing I just failed at is called the shh, quiet. You step onto a little gravel path, and then you look at a screen to monitor how loudly you're walking. You want the numbers to stay as low as possible. If you can get to the end without it telling you you're too loud, you win. And as it turns out, I am not the only one who has trouble with it. James Woods also got too loud, try again.
I don't move very well. If you don't have balance, you don't move well.
And he was both surprised and disappointed. He shakes his head in disbelief and tells me he'll do better in the future. Not only at the shh quiet, but more generally, too.
I've been satisfied with not doing, but I need to be satisfied with doing. I need to change. What I used to do it all, I used to exercise every day, but I lost it, you know? I just forgot about it, you know?
A little girl who runs by us, on the other hand, darts through and manages to barely register a sound.
You made it!
Yay! Lastly, there are the echo tubes, my favorite part. They are three big silvery pipes. The longest one is 105 feet, and all of them will echo sounds back to you at various frequencies.
The experience is like being in a Grand Canyon or in a hollow room. You can yell through the tubes and you can hear your voice reverb right back to you, come back to you in a different pitch.
I stood there for a long time, making all sorts of sounds, including these. But Deshaun likes them for a more profound reason.
One person could be at the other end, and you could talk to somebody you don't know, and they can feel safe and comfortable to talk back to you without invading their space. So it's a good way just to break down the social barriers that people usually experience in everyday life.
Sound commons might not be able to change the way we see other people, but it'll certainly change the way you hear them.
For Cross Currents, this is Nena Gensler-Debs in the long tube at UN Plaza. Boo!
Thanks, Nena. Our winner this week was Christopher White. We're ringing a bell for you, Christopher. And check your mail, because we're sending you a KALW t-shirt. Are there sonic spaces that you love? Call me and tell me all about them. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. I love it when you call. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. And that's it for us today. Our team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Lila Day, Chris Hoff, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Greer McVeigh, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Ted Muldoon. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Our local music today is by Roy Zimmerman. You can expect many election-themed songs from him when he performs at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley Sunday night. Music starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
On the end of the ship that's rising while the other end goes down. Yes, we charted out this course that left us broken on the ice. But there's no need to thank us. A hefty bonus will suffice. And we'll sit and chat about how we'll redecorate our offices in town. on the end of the ship that's rising while the other end goes down. When, where the hell's that cabin boy? My shoes could use a shine. The silver's not been polished, and it's nearly time to dine. In the waves so far below, the bobbing heads look like... The